Pennello.
Brush. So this is a place where it was inhabited by a painter that already cooked for his own friends in the 15th century. So imagine, we are going to eat in this restaurant that has been open for 4 centuries.
Wow.
We'll have a lot of experience
That's
of food.
So
you know.
Yeah.
Okay, what do we see? You know that the big cathedral, big dome of the architect, Brunelleschi, Filippo Brunelleschi, that was actually the first architect after the Middle Ages. Because remember that during the Middle Ages they were not architects, they were masons. They worked in a totally different methodology. Then with the revival of Classicism, what is the beginning of the Renaissance, we have a new theoretical approach to construction. Therefore, you know, this new individual personality will design, print, think, project theories, and becomes the contemporary architect. But if you think, the cathedral was built in the opposition of another church called Santa Reparata. Remember that if you look at this church, this church was completed like this. This church is named San Miniato. Saint Miniato. Miniato was a Roman soldier that was killed because he became Christian. Okay, so a martyr. Mm. And this church was built in the 11th century. So it was completed like this, except the sides, 1063. And so think about 1063, this church was already here, as you see it. What you see in Florence now was nothing was there. Except the white roof. You see the big square tower close to the cathedral. On the left, there is a white roof. That's the roof of the baptistry that is in front of the cathedral, built by the same masons that built San Miniato. So at that time, these are the only two buildings existing.
Wow.
Everything else in the 11th century was totally different. So in the place of Santa Maria del Fiore, that's a very large cathedral, actually is the third largest cathedral in the world. First of all is St. Peter in Rome, St. Paul in London, and Florence Cathedral. You are going to Rome, is that correct? When you are in St. Peter's and you walk on the central axis of the church, on the floor you find the measures of the most important cathedrals in Europe, in the world, basically, okay, so, including Washington, D.C. So you have an idea of the size of the buildings. If you think of buildings like Notre Dame in Paris, that seems to be a very large Gothic cathedral. Actually, Notre Dame fits inside Florence Cathedral. You can take Notre Dame and put it inside Florence Cathedral. The whole thing goes inside. So, and right there, when you look at the measures on the floor of St. Peter's, you have an idea of the size of buildings. There was a smaller church there called Santa Reparata. They decided to destroy that in the end of the 13th century, around 1280, 1290, to build a new building that will represent Florence. Florence, in the meantime, was growing, was becoming very important. So the pride of the people wanted to have a large cathedral. So the project started around 1290, the construction of the new Santa Maria del Fiore, done by many different craftsmen. There is a very important one that is named all the times, called Arnolfo di Cambio. That was also responsible for the building of the big palace. That's the palace of the government. You see how the cities have always, on one side, a big cathedral, that's the religious, spiritual power. On the other side, they have the political symbology, the secular representation, that's the public palace. Always this duality, typical of the Gothic medieval towns. So the cathedral was built, started around 1300, and it was completed up to the big drum around 1380. At that moment, nobody really knew how to build the dome. That was a very strange project in one way, because a dome was unusual for a Gothic cathedral, first of all. You know, implies already a different conception of space. Do you remember we talked about that when we were in Castiglione Fiorentino, about the dome, the meaning of the dome, and so on. So for many years the drum stayed open, until when at the beginning of the 15th century, you know, the first projects came about. They had a lot of competitions, people coming from everywhere in Europe. Some of their propositions were to fill up the whole cathedral with dirt. You imagine that, for engineers, this is a good idea. And so then you fill it up, the whole thing with dirt, on top of the dirt you build the dome. Right? Mm-hmm. And then the Florentine said, but how do you take away all the dirt? He said, no problem, we put coins in the dirt. See, so the Florentines will excavate the dirt to find the coins. You know? The project didn't pass. Later, around 1420, Brunelleschi came with very, very modern ideas on how to build a dome after studying a famous building in Rome. Do you know which building is that? The Pantheon, the famous building called the Pantheon, that has a dome a little larger than this one here, built by Hadrian in the 2nd century AD, that has a similar shape, actually is a sphere, but has the same concept. These are two domes, one on top of the other. Okay? So it makes it very strong from a structural viewpoint and very light. So much that the Pantheon, the Dome of the Pantheon, is built with heavy stone at the base of the dome, and when it gets to the top, it's built with pomix. You know, pomix, you can get a block of pomix like this and lift it like this, you know, it's very light. So Brunelleschi used the same principle, but here we have more of a Gothic shape. Think about this, a pointed arch, has these ribs, this internal structure that is evident, reflecting the Gothic culture, the Gothic system. But anyway, around 1420, the dome more or less, 1430, the dome was completed. They added a beautiful lantern on top. And the big tower you see there is the tower called the Giotto, Giotto's Tower. You know who Giotto is? Who is Giotto?
An artist.
A painter. Well, anyway, he's a very important painter of the beginning of the 14th century. Because remember, the Renaissance has two stages. The first one is at the end of the 13th, the beginning of the 14th century. So I'm talking about 1320, just before the plague. Do you remember the famous plague that killed about two-thirds of most of the people in Europe? So before that dramatic event, you know, there was a moment of revival of classical forms. And the most important people were Giotto as a painter, Dante Alighieri as a poet, and Giovanni Pisano as a sculptor. Already these people developed new theories, quite different from the earlier stage of the Middle Ages. Okay. So we have that moment there, you know, particularly important. So, Giotto's Tower. Seems that Giotto was one of the promoters, or first designers, if you want, of the tower. Then we have the old palace, I said, probably designed by the same mason that was in charge of the construction of the cathedral, and that's Arnolfo di Cambio. Then we have another dome in the middle right there. The dome is the dome on top of the church called St. Lawrence, that was designed by Brunelleschi, but not the dome. The dome was added later, and inside the dome are the tombs of the Medici family. Right there, there are two very large tombs. This one here is the tombs of the dukes, and there is another one designed by Michelangelo, that is the tomb of Lawrence and Giuliano, both in the St. Lawrence complex. Then if we go a little farther on the left, we see a pointed tower, and that's the church. We see a little bit of the facade, you see that, of Santa Maria Novella. That's a very important monastic order, monastic church, built by the Dominicans. So when we think of the church, we have always these orders.
of friars, fundamental for the composition of the ecclesiastic form. So we have the Dominicans on one side and the Franciscans on the other. So much that the church we see on the right here with the tower, that's a Santa Croce and that's a Franciscan church. These are the pillars of the church, representing two aspects of life. The Franciscans represent contemplative life. So much of their motto was Pax et Bonum, peace and wealth of spirit. They don't work. They go around, preach, and bring peace to the people, the sense of contemplation for the creation of God. On the other side, we have the Dominicans. Dominican means Dominis Canis, is the dog of the Lord, is the servant of the Lord. Dominis Canis, the Lord, the dog of the Lord. And they represent the active life. And their motto was Ora et Labora, pray and work. See? So these two aspects, contemplative and active. So on the other side, the enhancement of spirituality, on the other side, the enhancement of reason. Important for the support of the church. In the middle we have the cathedral. See that? So a city a little bit is a graphic reflection of a social, cultural, theological perception. So when we think of the big palace and the cathedral, linked by a very important road, as we said, Broadway, where the most important elements of commerce and the cultural elements of the time were expressed. The first chamber of commerce is right there. So like in New York, so basically. This is the Arno River right here. See where the Arno is. Then in a certain moment, you see all those little arches, right there? Okay. And then it turns left immediately. That's the famous Old Bridge. A bridge that was built in the 13th century. And it lasted for a long time. Actually, you know, during the war, all the other bridges were destroyed by the Germans when they were retreating. And the Allies coming from the south, you know, they crossed the old bridge with big tanks. See? That was the only connecting bridge from one side to the other of the city. So very strong bridge. It went through a lot of floods. Do you remember in 1966, when in Florence was a huge flood, I will show you the levels of the water as we go down. The water went on top of the bridge, opening all the shops and taking away all the jewels. So people were fishing for a lot of months on the other side, going down to Pisa. Pisa is at the end of the Arno River. And you know that between the Florentines and Pisani, there was never a very good friendship. You know, actually, us from Florence hate the Pisani. we say it's better to have a dead body in the house than a Pisano at the door. Okay, so you have an idea, no? And okay, as you can see, now these are the walls built in the 14th century, enclosing the city. So the whole city was enclosed by walls, guarded by fortresses. This is one of them. Forte Belvedere means the place where you have a beautiful view. And it looks more like a villa, but this has been built later in the 16th century, and Michelangelo was part of the design for this building. Actually, before, it was an older fortress. And another one is below, it's called the Lower Fortress. So Florence was enclosed by walls, defended by these two fortresses. Florence changed very much. Because in the 19th century, actually in 1870, Florence became the capital of Italy for a few years before it was moved to Rome. And in that particular moment, they made a lot of projects transforming the medieval town in a neoclassical style. So changing the whole. Too bad, because it was much more beautiful before. You see that big building in stone we see just in front of us? That's the Museum of Science. Look at the tower just on the left. We see the facade. And that would be interesting to see, particularly for people that, you know, will become scientists or engineers. There are all the tools of Galileo Galilei, and many other people that adventure in their scientific exploration. It was not easy for those people at that time. You know that the church was always on top of these people, trying to control them, trying to direct all their new theories, particularly theories that would modify the whole conception of the universe, geocentric or heliocentric systems. Even Galileo was put under a process.
Was convicted of heresy.
Was convicted of heresy. And anything that you would do against the church was heresy, you know. And it was absolved about 25 years ago. That was a long, long trial, you know. And there are so many things. Now what we do, we go inside. Okay, looking at styles, we cannot go in depth, but what we have, the Middle Ages has different stages, and one of them is called Romanesque. Romanesque is the type of style that you find in the 10th, 11th, 12th century. That has certain characteristics due to the type of culture, links with the church, religion, the classical survival. So it's a combination, it's like a big pizza, okay? So different in many different geographical areas of Italy. Here we have a group of masons that normally works in the area of Florence. They are building this church, the baptistry, another church on the other side of the town, that work with this particular style, you know, using these materials. The white marble is coming from Carrara. There are nice days where without the air pollution we see Carrara, we see the white mountains, and we think it's snow, it's marble. And you see it from here. Already the Romans quarried marble from Carrara. Think about the big blocks of Michelangelo and so on. So all the white marble you see is from Carrara. And then other types, the green from the area of Pistoia. And there is also a red that not used here, but you see, for instance, in the cathedral. So they work with a particular style, very much linked to a classical memory. This is very interesting, because we wonder why Florence became the city that reconnect with the ancient world, the classical culture, revived classicism, revived mythology. Well, because evidently this was a packet, you know, left from the Roman presence, because I want to tell you that Florence was a Roman city. And when we go downtown, in a certain moment, we start to see streets that go all like this, like you have in the States. And that's the atypical Roman grid. Yeah. See? Then the addition of the medieval town around. So this memory that retained this classical, see, that we see right here in these arches. The Brunelleschi will look at this and repeat, for instance, in one of the buildings he designed in Florence, the Hospital of the Innocents. So this is a quite classical type of Romanesque, but it's Romanesque, with certain characteristics, the ornamentation, for instance, typical of Romanesque medieval architecture, all this mosaic relationship constantly. We see many things typically of Romanesque architecture. Look at the little head that sticks out from the lintel right there, you see? Those are the shocking things, surprising things that are unique. You see? You see the little head there? And there is another one on the other side right here, see?
Oh, wow.
You see those little caryatids up there, you know, holding the building.
Yeah, yeah.
If you look, for instance, some of the symbols, that normally relate with numerological communication, because the geometrical forms in the Middle Ages are connected to meanings, esoteric meanings, and not mathematical, more numerological. It's like astronomy, is astrology, is not chemistry, is alchemy. Okay. If you look, even the ornamentations, they are different. The beautiful beautiful Byzantine mosaics up there, typical of the Byzantine representation, where you see a lot of their survival of their classical memory. When you look at Christ, always we will see another one inside, sitting with a position like this. That's exactly how Roman emperors sat in the Senate. See? So, a little bit you have to understand that the Masons had a certain images in the mind, and they repeated that. The first representation of Christ, it looks like Apollo, because that's how they knew, see? And so much that, you know, if you will go to a Roman shop of, let's say, of the 4th century AD, where Christianity was already accepted as a religion, and you want a coffin, they will ask you, are you pagan or Christian? See, Christian, okay. They will make figures somehow we connect with the Christian story, but they look like pagan figures. They didn't know how to think. They understand that, you know. So the early Christian stage is very interesting because still it's Latin. See, and you can modify a culture that was there for hundreds and hundreds of years, you know, slowly. I would say, and I said yesterday in class to another group, the problem the Roman world changed due to its own chemical evolution. When we think of Rome enlarging, conquering all Europe, think of how many languages, how many people, how eclectic was the society. There were 30 different religions in Rome, all officials. See, so can you imagine that? So evidently things were already transforming independently from the Christians. Actually, the Christians were unimportant for a century or two. So much art historians say Roman art became medieval before it became Christian. You follow me? Mm-hmm. See, this is a very interesting, important concept. Then later Christianity took over. But at the beginning, so much is related. Beautiful. Okay, let's walk inside.